Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, attended Macomb Community College at Northwood University. By his own admission, from 2000 to 2016, he lived a life of chronic drug addiction, and he flatlined 20 times. In 2016, he turned his life over to God, and since 2018, he's been a recovery coach and runs two sober houses. A modern-day miracle? His name? Brad Gregory. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a modern-day miracle, Brad Gregory. Brad, welcome. An honor to have you.
It's an honor to be here, Jack. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.
Can we start by you offering us an opening prayer this evening?
Absolutely. God, please use this time to use me as a conduit, and please speak through me, and if there is anyone else out there struggling the way that I was, please lift them up the way you did for me, and show them another way to live, and make all that pain somehow useful.
Amen. Thank you.
Amen.
All right, let's talk about your mom, Linda, and your dad, Mark, please.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said in your introduction, I grew up in a, you know, fairly affluent Grosse Pointe family, very well tended to, wanted for nothing, needed nothing. But, you know, they did the best they could, you know, with us and for us. And you know, it wasn't always perfect in my house growing up. But, I mean, it was very good. And we were afforded many things. And I was able to see the world in a way that other people weren't. And, you know, for whatever reason, that just, it wasn't enough for me. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lack of love that sent me down the path that I went down. It wasn't anyone's fault per se. I mean, it was just something in me, this soul sickness that, I wasn't even aware of, you know, and it just kind of was this festering wound that just kept kind of growing. Now, in hindsight, I know it was there long before I picked up drugs or alcohol or anything like that. I mean, it was there. I had that dark spot in me, you know, that vacuum.
All right. Everybody that ever talks about your mom, Linda, refers to her as a saint. What's the Yes. biggest thing you learned from your mom?
My mom is one of the most compassionate, empathetic human beings I have ever met in my life. I mean, she was around and stuck by me through things that no human being should have to endure. There's no way that I could have ever repay her, or that I could have ever done, you know, what she's done for me. I can't even, you know, I have two children of my own now, and I can't imagine watching this transpired with someone that you care about deeply and realizing there's really nothing you can do about it. And, I mean, she hung on even, I mean, almost to a fault, I would say in the end, but I mean, that's just her makeup. She's the most caring person I've ever met in my life.
All right. Your dad, Mark, he's helped me an awful lot through the years. He's an iconic middle market lender, first at Comerica for decades and now at Huntington. He's a world-class businessman who also happens to be a world-class banker. What did you learn from your dad?
My father, you know, taught me, he instilled a lot of values in me and a lot of the value of hard work and the value of money and just... He was a very hard-nosed man. I mean, very to the point and cut and dry. And that's what many people appreciate about him. And I, again, in hindsight, appreciate that. It was hard for me growing up because a lot of these things I didn't want to hear. I didn't want to recognize in myself. But he was very, good at finding that. And he's very good at cultivating and finding the best in people as well, as you know. He's been very instrumental and still is to this day. As far as, you know, going through the addiction part, he took, you know, the line of what the experts were telling him to do is like, you got to let this guy, you got to let him go and you got to let him find his bottom. And, you know, some people don't make it out, unfortunately, but like, if you keep hanging on, like death is almost certain.
All right. When and how did you start going down the wrong path?
I probably looked very, very much like other people and spoke, but like there was something inside of me that was just this lack of or longing for something else. And it's just chronic malcontent, I would say. And it was early on. And, I started, you know, dabbling, and I actually pursued it even in, I mean, as early as middle school. You know, I was already drinking and smoking pot and stuff like that. And there was no real reason for it, like I said. I mean, but there was just something in me that was longing for something else or to escape who and what I was and just feel a little different.
You said you told me over lunch recently that your addiction really began in 2000 at age 20. And then I quote you, addiction has little to do with the substance itself. It's really about escaping reality. Could you explain that to us?
Well, I mean, you know, there's, you know, 20, 30 different 12-step programs out there. And the only time they ever talk about the substance is the first half of step one, because the cure for it has nothing to do with the actual ailment itself or what it is you're trying to overcome, because that's not the actual problem. The actual problem lies in me, in my perspective and my perception of the world around me. I'm sure you can kind of relate that, you know, you'll see two people in very similar circumstances. And for one, you know, they look at it as a blessing and the other, it's a curse. And it's like the exact same thing. I mean, I can do the same thing from day to day in my own life. It's like one day I'm like, oh, I'm depressed in bed. The next day I'm elated. I'm almost crying. I'm tears of joy. And it's like, and circumstances haven't changed at all. So it's this internal thing and how I perceive the world and my place in it that is the actual problem. And that's what I need to overcome, not the substance itself. We spend so much time like, you know, how do I get rid of this obsession? How do I fight this urge that I'm going through constantly? How do I fight it? Well, that's a losing battle. I've come to realize, you know, it's how do you get rid of the obsession altogether, root and branch? That, I mean, that's the goal, because fighting it indefinitely, that's a losing proposition that I've fought way too many times.
We're talking to Brad Gregory, and I'm Jack Prasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Prasula. We're with Brad Gregory. By his own admission, from 2000 to 2016, he lived a life of chronic drug addiction. Brad, share with us a typical day through those years.
A typical day would consist of, the latter years, I was very sickly, you know, and, you know, I would just pretty much do whatever I had to do to fuel this addiction. I'd become a vessel and a slave to it on a level that, like, most people can't even realize. You know, it supersedes rational thought, and that's why, you know, you sit there and you can't reason with somebody who's locked in this. You can't talk. Like, it's just like it takes on a life of its own. And that's what I did. You know, I just fueled this thing that was insatiable and by any means necessary. And I did many things I'm not proud of. I mean, I've stolen from my own family, I've sold drugs, yada, 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 the whole thing. And there was, you know, and I grew up with values and it, you know, like I was saying, both my parents were very upstanding citizens and great people and they instilled all that in me. So it's not like I didn't know better. I absolutely did, but it had me. I mean, it had its hooks in me and I was truly a slave to it. So, I mean, it got bleak and there was, you know, every single day, you know, you wake up and you know, it's going to be a little bit worse than the, the day before it. And that's a frightening prognosis, you know, that most people will never have to know that. But, I mean, and if you never do, how nice for you. But for those of us who have, you know, it is a fate worse than death. And I have to go into that with that understanding, because I get frustrated dealing with addicts all day long too. But realizing that, like, this is not this person doing this. You're dealing with a, I don't know if you want to call it a demon, you know, saying that literally or figuratively. I'm not even sure on that. But it is like a demonic possession is how I look at it.
We're talking to Brad Gregory. Since 2018, he's been a recovery coach and runs two sober houses. If you want to learn more, www.sobersupportcoalition.org. Brad, share with us your relationship with God in those years.
Yeah, my relationship with God in those years was non-existent. I'm not sure if I didn't believe or if I was just upset with him. But it was not there, and I did not act as if I had a God active in my life or he was active in mine until it was undeniable that he was there and he was active in my life and did, for whatever reason, want to spare me and save me. And he did. And I was at the time living basically washed up on the shores of Oahu, which sounds lovely to most people. You'd say in Hawaii, but I would bring my hell with me everywhere I went. And I turned paradise into a nightmare. And I was basically living homeless. I was kind of indigent. I'd be in and out of, other people's apartments. I'd have mine get kicked out. I mean, just like war on all fronts. My life was in total shambles and beyond repair. So I thought, and I was at my lowest. I mean, the drug use had taken a hold of me to the point I was deathly ill. I was sickly. You would see me, and I probably weighed 130 pounds at 6'2". And I remember vividly just hitting my knees and praying to a God I didn't believe in or understand, and just said, God, audibly said this out loud, God, either help me or kill me. I can't take one more step. And you know, the help we want isn't necessarily the help we get. I mean, but he did. And my mom, even to this day, remembers. I called her and said in tears, you know, you don't have to worry about me anymore. I felt the hand of God. I felt him now active in my life. And what happened next was I was in basically in and out of consciousness to the point that I was put into a psych ward. Now, you know, a medical professional would call this a psychotic break. I know it to be something different, you know, because I've had other things where I would end up in the psych ward, and this was not that. And anyway, they released me from there, and 3 hours later, I was back in the same hospital. This time I was in there with a broken foot, broken hand, two broken ribs, collapsed lung, dislocated hip, and a fractured skull. Nobody knows what happened. I don't to this day. I was in a coma briefly, I think about a day and a half. And my girlfriend at the time, they told her, you know, he may well not come out of this. I mean, if he does, he could very well be a vegetable, you know. Obviously that wasn't what happened. And I owe everything in my life to that moment and to that that spirit that overcame what I could not, that removed that obsession that was driving my life and fueling my very existence.
We're talking to Brad Gregory. Brad, by your own admission, you say for those 16, 17 years, you were a zombie and you flatlined 20 times. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I was brought back and resuscitated very, very often. I don't know what the exact number is, but it was many. I mean, I lost count and, you know, it brought back with, you know, I was a heroin addict for many years. So they bring you back using this thing called Narcan. They would also use defibrillator paddles and a charcoal ventilator when I'd overdose on pills. I was fortunate in that people would kind of stumble upon my corpse at the right time, so to speak, not to be too graphic in that, but like, it was almost inexplicable. And to know the degree of sickness that you're talking about, I remember being upset when I'd be brought back, you know, like, oh my God, I have to do this again. Like I can't go back to this again. I mean, it's exhausting just to think about that. I have to live the way that I have to live just to exist in perpetual pain and anguish. And, you know, is a disgrace and an embarrassment and all these things, because there is still a human being in there that's well aware of the fact that, like, I'm hurting everyone around me. I've become a burden to my family, a disgrace, and, you know, everything. And all of these things, you know, I'm internalizing, and it's just making me sicker and sicker and sicker. And I'm stuck in a mental trap that I cannot spring, left to my own devices.
We're talking to Brad Gregory. If you want to learn more, www.SoberSupportCoalition.org. All right, then you move from Hawaii back home with your mom.
Yes.
What happened?
Yeah, so I moved back. We had been kicked out of our apartment in the time that I was in the hospital, and my girlfriend at the time, her mother allowed us to come, and not because she liked me, and nor should any mother at that point, if this is who your daughter's dating, but she more extended to a courtesy that you would extend to a dying person, which I was at that point. And so I stayed there for a time being, and I had to have multiple surgeries done, which they couldn't facilitate there. So my mother reluctantly allowed me to move back to Michigan. At this point, I'd been estranged from my family for the better part of a decade. And, you know, so she didn't even tell anyone I was here, you know, for several months, probably almost 6 months. And I was here. And like I said, the obsession to use was lifted from me in that moment. But I still had everything that, as we were talking about, all of those, that soul sickness, all of those demons in my mind, all the things that I had done was just gnawing at me. And I was, you know, at this point, basically suicidal, you know, not wanting to use, but I mean, almost almost a worse position, because now I have to look at all these things with no anesthetic. You know, I'm actually just sitting in everything that I'd done and all my guilt and shame and agony and anguish. And, you know, my mom could kind of see that almost dead look in my eye. And she said, you know, why don't you go with your aunt she goes to these AA meetings. And I had been before, but, like, I didn't think there was anything there for me, you know. But at this point, I was so broken that I just wanted to, you know, have some human contact and talk to some other people and maybe get a cup of coffee. And so I started going. But went in with a new view, you know, that perspective and perception and had cracked a little bit, and the ego had been deflated enough to actually listen to what these people were saying for the first time in my life. And then not only that, but following it with the actions that they talked about. And, you know, I would start to notice that, you know, my life was different, you know, and these people that I'd come in with, I'm seeing other people's lives change. And just being in kind of shock on that, I had painted myself into such a tiny corner, and I was not going to be able to proceed if I didn't start doing some things to rectify this. I mean, I had outstanding warrants all over the country. I couldn't open a bank account. I didn't have a driver's license, didn't have a car, hadn't been employed in the better part of 10 years. And there were other people that had these problems, and they walked through them, and they would sit there and take the time to help me through them, and with no agenda or any kind of monetary gain or anything like that. It was just somebody, you know, doing for them what somebody had helped them with, doing for others what somebody had done for them.
We're talking to Brad Gregory. I'm Jack Crusoe. This is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crusoe, and we're with a modern-day miracle, Brad Gregory. Brad, if there's a mom or dad listening tonight with a son or daughter, and the way you were, what do you say to that mom and dad tonight?
I say that, I mean, I obviously, I feel for you and the position that now more than ever, now that I have kids of my own, that it's unimaginable, you know, to what you must be going through, and realizing that, you know, it's not your fault. It's not anything that you did. And unfortunately, there's nothing that you can do to change it other than love them and pray for them and wait for the miracle, because it's in God's hands. You set them in God's lap, so to speak, because it's there's nothing that you can do. And we talked a little bit about, you know, when I see someone at the street corner begging, you know, what do you say to that person? Unfortunately, you know, sometimes I give money, sometimes I don't. I don't know what the right course of action is. But the one thing I do know is that there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do until that person is ready to do something about it. And I guess all I can do is be there for when they are, for when whenever that miracle happens, I can be a conduit and have everything set up as best as I can on my end that we can bring them into the fold and help exact that change and walk them through all those pitfalls that we have to go through early on. You're dealing with people that obviously aren't good at dealing with problems. You know, we've fled and evaded them our entire life, but realizing that, like, they didn't go away just because I did that. They were compounding with interest, and I'm going to have to atone for that in some way at some point, and kind of walking side by side with them when that moment comes.
All right. The name of this show is With God, Anything is Possible. So now I'm going to quote you. I feel blessed to have walked the path I've walked. Brett, are you sure?
I am. I thought I would hear people say that early on, and I think, you know, you must be insane. But like I was talking about earlier, there was something in me before I ever picked up the drugs, and that was not going to resolve on its own, you know. So had I not have been broken and had it beaten out of me, I would never have the opportunity to do something about it. I mean, I was blessed with the gift of pain and having the, you know, that ego beaten out of me and to leave enough of a crack that a transformation could happen. Because I don't know if I don't think that had I not have experienced that, I would not have been forced into a position where I would have to do something about it, where I would have to take that deep introspective look into myself and realize that all those resentments that I had against other people, I was living in a delusional existence, you know, and to have to, like, take that look in the mirror. People talk about that moment of clarity, the alcoholic moment of clarity. I mean, I can very easily tell you what that is. It's the moment when you look in the mirror and say, oh, my God, I'm the problem. I'm the problem. There's no one left to blame. Everybody else has long since fled, and it's just me sitting there. And then, you know, having to go through and take an honest look at that and share that with other people and atone for wrongs done to other people. But, like, having to go through that has given me a life beyond. I mean, if someone told me that early on, if I would have got everything I wanted in my first year of sobriety, I'd have sold myself short. And I can tell you that's absolutely true. You have no idea what God has in store for you. All I can do is show up and do the things that are difficult that I don't want to do. And I look around and I turn around and not only did I get through them, but like I have a life because of them, a life I never could have imagined myself having. So without the pain, I've heard someone say that, you know, people don't change because they see the light. Typically, they change when they feel the heat, you know, and I needed to feel the heat, you know. So some people are smart enough to, or wise enough to make that change on their own. I don't think I'm one of them.
All right. There's a listener tonight that says, you've just, for the last 20 minutes, you've just described my life. If the truth be known, I'm a total addict, whether it's booze, drugs, sex, porn, food, whatever.
Yeah.
I've thought many times of ending it. Brad, God is using you tonight. What should I do?
You need to go in and seek help, whatever that looks like, and kind of come to the realization that this is not going to just be fixed on its own, or, you know, it's not going to, because it's always, you know, well, I'll do it tomorrow. These things will just iron out. And, you know, that was kind of my plan for the future, is I'll just, you know, one day I'll probably just find a bag of money by the side of the road. You know, like there's only hope, but not followed up by anything, but kind of coming to that realization that, like, if I was going to fix this or think my way out of it, I'd have done it by now. You know, so it's going to come from seemingly unrelated actions. You know, like we talked about before, you know, the actual addiction, whatever the substance is or the behavior, is only one tiny part. It's all these other unrelated things that I walk through, seemingly unrelated, that are actually the key to it. And all of those things are about cultivating a relationship with God.
Speaking of God, you've gone from no relationship with him, not sure he's even there, to now you totally trust God. How'd you do it?
I do.
How'd you do it?
Well, I saw what was done for me, and it was irrefutable what was done for me. I could, if I could sit here and tell you that, like, I did all this on my own, I would do that, you know, because it's my nature to be arrogant, you know. But that's just not the case. You know, I know what happened, and I know it was not of my own will or accord. So I know that things work out according to his plan, and his plan's better than mine. So even to do something like this is very unnerving for me to be on the radio and discuss this, but and everything that brought me to this point, that I met you and everything. So I don't like public speaking. I don't like standing in front of people, but realizing that, like, all I can do is show up, you know, and the results are in his hands. So, you know, maybe I can be a conduit, or but I can't do that. Like, if I'm too afraid. And that was, you know, just for whatever reason, I had that my whole life, that I would give up before I even started. You know, I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't see how it's going to benefit me. I don't this, that, you know, and kind of just realizing that, like, listen, it's not about me. Everything that was my biggest problem in life was, I'm drowning in me. I can't escape it. So coming in here and kind of realizing that, like, you're just part of the bigger picture, and go play your part, and the results will fall where they may. That's why if I come on here and I you know, I don't come off great in front of however many listeners you have, but one or two actually needed to hear what I had to say, that's what I was supposed to do, you know? So it's not about me.
All right. We're talking to Brad Gregory. If you want to learn more, www.SoberSupportCoalition.org. Brad, there's a listener that says, I admire you, but me personally, I can't trust God. I'm a control freak, and I guess, if I'm really honest, I'm afraid and I'm too embarrassed to trust God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say this. I know where you're coming from, and I understand that. But I would also point out, like, if you've gotten to this point, how's your way working out for you? I know that that it can be frightening to relinquish control, but, like, all the control and angst and anxiety I put myself through has never served me any good at all, you know. And when I can just set that aside and just be not the all important me, but just one of God's many, you know, and play my part, that things tend to work out much better, you know? So by relinquishing that control, I've given myself a chance and truthfully a far better existence and just a better perception of the way things are.
We're talking to Brad Gregory, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJI.
Jack Crisula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Brad Gregory, modern-day miracle, and since 2018, he's been a recovery coach and runs two sober houses. What are sober houses, Brad?
So it's transitional housing. Typically, it's for people that come out of treatment. Sometimes they come out of jail, sometimes out of detox. But it's for guys that are, you know, newly sober, early in recovery, and just need more structure than going out and living on your own or whatever else. So it's basically just a house full of guys with a common destination. So we, you know, we bring meetings into the house, you know, we expose them to the sober community at large, help them find work, and help kind of give them a purpose and some direction. We've also started a nonprofit, which we call a transitional coordinator, basically a social worker that works with the guys in these houses to help them through all the early pitfalls that they're going to come across. Because typically you come in not just with the addiction, you come in with your legal problems, your medical problems, your, you know, financial problems, you know, I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And just having someone there for that support to help you through, because it's very frustrating to try to navigate. I mean, you talk to like a normal person, like if you were to lose your job or something like that, it'd be traumatic. Well, imagine going through 15 of these things simultaneously. It's too much to ask of anybody, especially people that don't know how to deal with problems in the first place. So just having someone there that can help guide them and kind of be a cheerleader for them. And just when they get frustrated with, you know, sitting on hold or having to deal with these things, to just take a breath, take a step back, we'll get through this together, and chip away at it. And all of a sudden you turn around and you go, my God, I have a life. I didn't see how that was possible. And in a far shorter time than I thought it could have happened. But I mean, it's good to just have them, A, you know, in a sober, safe place, and B, have all the tools at their disposal that are out there and offered. Because there are things that are out there, but that doesn't mean you necessarily know how to access them.
If you want to learn more, www.SoberSupportCoalition.org. Brad, in 2018, you started something called SALE, Ready, Inc. What does that do?
Yeah, so I have the guys at the house. We get houses prepped for sale. So we do some other stuff too, but we do basic painting, demo, you do minor drywall repair, so light landscaping, stuff like power washing, just getting houses ready for sale so they can pass inspection, look good, bring the highest dollar amount they can. So we've had quite a bit of success with that. We went through, I don't know if, I live in Gross Point. We had terrible flooding here over the last summer, and so we helped people out with that. Did some restoration work, get the basements cleaned out, and tried to put them back together. And so it just gives the guys, you know, and a lot of times they have some issues getting employment early on, so we can put some guys to work early on and kind of give them a little self-esteem, put some money in their pocket, and just some dignity and self-respect.
Some addicts meet you and say, "Is Brad Gregory? He's a fool. He's sold out to the system." What do you say when you hear that?
I would say Brad Gregory, left to his own devices, is a fool. I mean, and I proved it. I mean, I was an abysmal failure at life, and when I kind of just let go of that and started to live each day by day, you know, as I was actually meant to, you know, things have worked out, I would say, far better for me. So, I mean, if people want to think that, you know, you're obviously welcome to your own opinion, but I would tell you that, you know, the way I live today is far better than me just living on my own self-reliance, because that got me to a place that I was ready to throw myself out of a 27th floor building.
All right. The 12 steps, they've helped tens of millions of people. Tell us why the 12 steps have been so successful for so many.
Because it wasn't my idea. That's what they say. You know, like I was talking about before, like if I had the answer to my problem, I would have done it by now. I didn't want to live like this or do this, but and I hear people come in and they're like, well, you know, I don't want to admit this to another person, and I don't want to make amends to people. It's like, well, you're in good company, because nobody else wanted to either. You know, it's the hardest thing in the world to take a look at yourself, not point the finger out and blame everybody else, but like, what was my part in it? You know, what did I do? Where do I owe an apology? Where, you know, all of these things. And going back to the fact that never do they really reference alcohol or drugs. It's all working on myself. You know, and that was the thing I didn't get so early on when I'd come into these meetings. I thought, well, these are very nice people, but this is just not for me. I don't see how this is going to work. I tell you, I have, you know, outstanding warrants. I have financial issues. I have this, and you hand me a book and offer me a sponsor. Like, maybe you weren't listening. Like, that wasn't my problem, but it is. Like, I was the problem. All of those things can be addressed, but like, if you address each one of those problems independently and don't work on yourself, there's just going to be more problems. So what's the point? You know, I'm just going to keep making them. you know, this is to actually give us some self-awareness of who and what we are and pop that delusion and allow us to exist in the world.
God regularly does his greatest work with the least likely people. And you're a shining example of that. What you're doing now is fantastic. Why? God's got a great sense of humor. Why does he use the least likely, oftentimes, to do the greatest things?
I think because, you know, it's one of those things where you can't really appreciate it or understand it until you've walked through it. And going back to what we talked about earlier, that, you know, I'm grateful for having been given this opportunity. Yeah, I didn't like it when I went through it, but, like, if I didn't go through it, I couldn't do what I do today. So, I mean, in a sense, it is a blessing, you know. I mean, my purpose was kind of I kind of just, you know, floated through life and existed. And people would ask me, like, what do you want to do? And I never had an answer for that. And all of a sudden, now it's made perfectly clear, you know, and the fact that I know this is my purpose and this is what I'm supposed to be doing, it doesn't mean it's always easy or even what I want to be doing all the time. I deal with very difficult people on a regular basis. And sometimes I kind of throw my hands at it, like, you know, what do I even care? Why am I doing this? But because I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, it's hard and it's frustrating, but it's also the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. And the times that you see people get it and you see families and relationships and fathers and, you know, husbands and these things restored, and this person who was completely useless and was ready to end it all and become a productive, helpful, useful member of society, and God willing, use that and then show the next guy, and like this network of goodness coming off of this broken individual. I mean, it's the most satisfying thing in the world. So I wouldn't change a thing. And that sounds strange because I did do, you know, I hurt people. I did all these things, but like collectively, I wouldn't change it.
Brad Gregory, you're a fantastic instrument for God. Keep up the fabulous work.
Thank you so much, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.
Believe in yourself.